This podcast is brought to you in part by the estate of Bob Nelson. Bob was a lover of all things San Diego and a longtime supporter of Voice of San Diego and its podcasts. We at Voice of San Diego are honored to have his support during his lifetime and continued support through his estate planning. Are you looking to engage with regional decision makers, business leaders, elected officials, and industry professionals committed to improving downtown San Diego? Join the Downtown San Diego Partnership. As a member, you'll receive access to exclusive resources, exposure to special programming, networking functions, and additional opportunities unmatched by any other local membership-based organization. Join the driving forces behind the future of downtown San Diego. For a 10% discount, become a member today.
Thanks for joining us on this Voice of San Diego podcast bonus episode. I'm Scott Lewis, CEO and Editor-in-Chief at Voice of San Diego. And this is a debate about the future of the 79th Assembly District, at least who will represent that district in Sacramento. And this is the second half of that debate, dedicated to police, criminal justice, and criminal justice reform. Last week, I hosted a discussion with the five candidates looking to replace Shirley Weber. She represented the district for almost a decade and was arguably one of the most influential lawmakers at the state capitol. Governor Gavin Newsom recently appointed her, though, to be Secretary of State, which left the seat open. So now we have a special election to fill that seat. The primary vote is April 6th. The candidates you're going to hear from are Marco Contreras. He's a small business owner. Aramique Glass Blake is a restorative justice consultant. An activist, Leticia Munguia. She's a community organizer, an official with the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. Shane Suzanne Parmalee is a public school teacher and also an official with the Teachers Union. And Akila Weber is a doctor and La Mesa City Council member. So here is the second half of that debate. One of the biggest accomplishments of Shirley Weber's time in the state assembly was the passage of AB 392. That bill limited when law enforcement can use deadly force. It was a huge deal and a major update to state law. With the influence that law enforcement and police officer unions have in politics, I asked the candidates if they would accept police union support. And the first up is Aramique Glass Blake.
Now, Scott, you know the answer to that. No, come okay. on. So they did reach out to come after their endorsement. And I called them up and said, I will not take it. But as you all know, I'm the chair of the CAB Community Police Advisory Board. I also sit on so many different boards and advising public officials and law enforcement, trained law enforcement. I consult with the National Conflict Resolution Center, and I am a restorative justice consultant. So I do a lot of work with law enforcement throughout. I just would not take the support. And I've written multiple articles in the UT and elsewhere of why we need to make sure that police unions stay out of politics. That is why we cannot get things done. And when we do get things done, they get watered down to get passed. We need to make sure that we're reimagining what policing looks like. Guardian versus warrior, public safety, law and order. We need to really look and see what that looks like when we reduce our communities from being over-policed, but we also make sure that we are reallocating resources to make sure that we have counselors, we have rapid responders, we have actual programs and implementation that works, that reduces harm, reduces gun violence, all of those different things. So no, I will not take their support, but I'm always willing to work across the line with everyone, but I'm unapologetic about not watering policy down.
Marco Contreras, I've always thought that Republicans missed an opportunity, you know, in building bonds with people of color who are frustrated by law enforcement in their communities if they use their approach about suspicion about government in this way. Is there more you could do or could lead in building more trust with those communities and law enforcement?
Well, listen, I am a person of color, first of all. And while I have great empathy for anyone that has ever experienced any sort of injustice, we have to look at the evidence. The police officers in San Diego have about 600,000 to 1 million stops a year. Only 2 to 3% of those are forceful interactions. Other places, big cities all over the nation would die to have those numbers. Only 8 to 10 shootings a year. So we have, I don't think that our police officers get enough credit or support for what they do. And if you wanted, I know defunding the police was a hot topic, which I would be completely opposed to that. Let me tell you why. If we ever went that route, they did it in Minneapolis. They took away $1 million in funding. And you know what happened right after that? Crime increased by 21%, property crime increased by 10%, and they had an increase of 1,000 incidents in crime. Ironically, shortly after, they tried to increase their funding because the police were demonized and they were fleeing. So I honestly think we've always done a great job at honoring our military, and I think it's time we honor our police officers. They're doing a great job. San Diego is America's safest big city, and I'm really thankful for that.
Akilah Weber, you had a unique position this summer. You were a city council member who had to deal with unrest and your own law enforcement there, the police department that has made some changes since then. I think in actually stood out in a way. What's your take on what the next steps in criminal justice reform need to be? And would you take the support of the police officers union or endorsements?
I would not take their endorsement. I would definitely work with them on issues that dealt with, reform or anything that tapped into their area. But I would not take their endorsement, nor would I take their money. And before I get to that answer, I just want to say, I take a different stance, Marco, because I think, what you quoted, 2 to 3% of forceful interactions and, your death rate, any forceful interaction should not occur. And anyone who dies unjustly should not happen. And so I'm not going to sit here and tout, San Diego is safer than other cities, because that's what we want. But we also have room for improvement. So to your point, Scott, yes, we did have some significant issues in La Mesa in May and over the summer, specifically because of the need for improved reform in policing. And I'm very grateful for some of the legislation that has come out of Sacramento, because with certain bills like SB 1421, once we went through the whole rigmarole of the investigation and then the firing and then the appeal that he had. And then, once we got everything, we were able to release the results, because I do believe in transparency, so that people could find out what actually happened that night. And the reason why we were able to was based on that bill, because he lied. And so based on dishonesty, we were able to release that and give that to the public. But we've done significant strides, and it has not been easy. But it is important that when you're dealing with things like criminal justice, that you have someone that is a very strong voice and a strong advocate, not just in public, but also in private. And it does take working across the aisle and making sure that your fellow colleagues understand the importance of this. The reason why things happened in La Mesa the way it happened was because of years of not listening to residents, years of not listening to what was recommended. In 2015, a county judge told La Mesa that we needed to establish a citizens oversight review board. Our mayor said no, our council said no. In 2018, we had that unfortunate incident at Helix. We talked, it was blank, there was no movement. When I joined the city council, I said one of the things that I was definitely going to do was to make sure that we listened to the residents and that we established a citizens police oversight review board. And that is what we've done, a very strong one for our city. And we're working with our city on establishing a new chief of police. And we did a full investigation to see what exactly happened at that time, to make sure that it doesn't happen again, and that we are always have transparency and open communication. But there is still a lot of reform that needs to be done. And going through this process in La Mesa has shown me that there needs to be a lot more done in Sacramento. I know Senator Bradford had a bill that unfortunately died on the Senate floor because it wasn't voted on, that dealt with decertification of officers. Because what we see is that these officers that do these behavior have a repetitive history of it, and yet they can always just resign or retire and go to another police force. So we need to deal with that. We need to increase the ability for some of these records to be released. And that's a bill also by Senator Skinner. And the California Legislative Black Caucus has been very strong on the issues of criminal justice. And I'm very honored that they have endorsed my candidacy. And if I am lucky to go to Sacramento, I look forward to working with them.
Okay. Marco, I assume you would take the endorsement in support of the police officer.
Absolutely. And let me just say this. Violence should never be justified. And we should never let anything stand in the way of protecting our people and our district. So, and if anything like that were ever happen again, we should be ready and prepared so that our businesses and our people feel safe.
Okay. Shane Parmalee?
So I think I'm in a unique position here. I'm the daughter of a law enforcement officer. My dad was a deputy sheriff, so I know what it's like to grow up in a house with somebody who is tasked with doing work that they are really not trained for. Like, my dad had a degree from Stanford. He was not qualified to do a lot of the victim interviews he had to do. Like, we need specialized, trained people who, like, they went into psychology or they went into social services or they went into mental health to do a lot of the work that police are currently called in for. And there's trauma created on both sides. Like, this is not a good setup that we have right now, where police are like the hammer and everything's a nail. And if you have a problem or something's happening, you only have one group of people to call in. And those group of people have not been on. I was shocked when I found out how long it takes to get certified to be a law enforcement officer. And like, you get to carry a gun and arrest people. And that's it for how long it took for you to do that. So I think the qualifications and training should be higher, quite frankly. I think we need to absolutely reassign certain job duties that are just automatically sent to the police department and reassign them to people who are specialized and certified and trained in those areas. You know, I'm a teacher. I deal with all kinds of interesting people all day long, inside and outside of the classroom. And it's been interesting, you know, doing activist work, how you can interact with people that law enforcement just like immediately want to arrest or escalate the situation. We really need to pivot towards de-escalating and not funneling more people into the criminal justice system. I was shocked when I learned that law enforcement officers can't be decertified. Teachers and doctors, we can lose our license to practice. And absolutely, absolutely law enforcement should too. Police officers who are caught lying, And people lose their lives over that. They lose their jobs. They lose their families. They go to jail. They like, there's no compensation for them. And the cop just goes on their merry way and keeps working. And that's bad for the entire police in general. Like, we need to be engendering faith in being able to call law enforcement. And the reality is, whatever your politics are, the reality is there's a large percentage of people right now who do not feel safe by calling the police for help. And that's a problem, period, that needs to be addressed. And while we all might have our own positions and our reasons for why that is, we need to focus on creating solutions that get us to a better place where we have less people being funneled into the criminal justice system, whether people mean to be racist or not. You know, the research is there, the data is there, who's getting stopped more, who's getting over-policed. And we need to end qualified immunity.
Thank you. Leticia?
So, Scott, just to answer your questions, your original questions first, I will share that, yes, the police department, the association has reached out, not met with them. I think those were your two original questions. I will concur with a lot of what Shane shared. I think for me, there has been historical evidence of how communities are policed vary depending on where you live in the city and where you are within the assembly district. Right. There's been references made to approaches and how folks respond to a call. So as an assembly member, I come to you with solutions. And this is what I want to propose. It is a lot what a police officer has on their plate. You've heard that by many of the folks on the call here today. Right. My recommendation is that for our police departments to be successful, we need to be able to provide an abundance of resources. For example, just with this COVID pandemic, our county officials, our county board of supervisors implemented a 211 emergency call for support around COVID, right? My proposal and my consideration to all of our residents is let's envision how we respond to calls when a police officers get dispatched, right? Not in every single incident is there a need to have the full, like the police department respond in a way that they may not be equipped if it's a crisis moment. If it's a situation where an individual that requires therapeutic and clinical response, right? I would say that we need to look at how the lack of resources that police currently have, that we need to revisit the budget and we need to reimagine how officers are trained to respond to calls and how calls actually get filtered to police departments and how they get dispatched. Are we able going to be able to respond in a way that our Black and Brown communities are aware of engaging in a relationship with law enforcement that's built on trust? Are we going to train our officers to ensure that they have additional training in implicit bias? Are we going back to a community policing model that actually focuses on building relationships with the community that they are patrolling? That is something that has been proven to be successful throughout our entire country. It's time that we build a tomorrow for all. It's time that we create another number, not the 911, but that we look at developing a number that allows us to secure resources to help families or individuals that are having a crisis moment.
Can I just say something? What we've done in La Mesa to just really kind of bring this all together.
Sure.
And I do believe in reimagining what our police force should do. And the fact that they are oftentimes called out to do things that they're not necessarily trained for. And so one of the things that I asked our police department and our city was to reimagine what our police department would look like and ask them to look at what's going on in Cahoots in Oregon. As an example. And so we actually went and looked at that and we have implemented that in La Mesa. We have our own program called the HOME program through the PATH program. And it has reduced, since November, the number of calls that, you know, police would normally go out for homeless or another situation that they shouldn't need to do by 40%. And that's just what we've been able to do in the last few months. We've been able to house people because we have a psychologist and a social worker that is a part of this program. So yes, it is possible to do it. And I'm very proud that that I was able to implement and really get our city in La Mesa down that path of reimagining what policing would look like.
Leticia, I just want to clarify, did you say you would consider getting the support and endorsement of the police officers union?
I haven't met with them, Scott. I think that I would consider meeting with everyone to see what the message is. I'm open to meeting with them and hearing what they would share.
Aramique, go ahead.
So I just want to say and give perspective to the work that's been done in La Mesa and really throughout the 79th and throughout San Diego County prior to Aquila being elected. We did a lot of the work, my organization, Generation Justice, and coalitions that we created. We did so much work after Breonna Bell was slammed to the ground at Helix High School. We paved the way to be able to have Black representation on La Mesa City Council. And we also paved the way to make sure, and we did not stop. When the cameras left, I was still meeting with the chief of police and meeting with the city manager, which really runs the city, and making sure that we got police oversight and that we had policies, practices, and procedures changes within the city of La Mesa. And then furthermore, we made sure that the officers got trained in restorative justice and restorative practices. And we made sure that the schools in La Mesa were not only open, but willing. And some of those trainings I came and did myself in restorative justice and restorative practice. We have such a high rate of Black and Brown children who are being expelled and suspended at such a high rate for doing the same exact things that their white peers do. And so we wanted to make sure that our kids are not continuing to be brutalized and mistreated on school campuses, and that we remove officers from our campuses because we don't need cops. We need counselors on our school campuses. We need resources. The officers, and I have to say this, the officers have been trained. We are dealing with a heart issue. Racism is a heart issue. Biases are things that we grow up with. We all have them, conscious and unconscious, right? We've provided so much training for police officers. And in order to get to peace and unity, we must first go through justice. And the thing about it is, we must make sure that officers who brutalize or kill or harm our young people or our people of color or people in general, disabled folks, our veterans, our homeless population, make sure that they are being held accountable. And that is not happening. And we have to do that at the state level as well.
Marco, you were shaking your head at one point.
No, just real quick. I have a lot of friends that are part of law enforcement. And these guys and women put their lives on the line for us to protect us. It is in our best interest, and to the viewers, it is in our best interest that we honor our police officers. If we've learned from history, if you demonize the officers, they leave and they quit. And that's exactly the opposite of what we want. Now, Shane mentioned disparities. Let me tell you something. There's an article in The Voice of San Diego, July 15th of 2020, that shows how the larger population of the homeless population is people of color. And did you know that 40% of all police stops are interactions with homeless people? That's why there are disparities. We need to give our police officers credit because they're doing a phenomenal job. And they have a wellness program. Listen to this. They bring in their officers where they deal with their mental and their emotional health so that they can process through their emotions and then send them out into the field and handle things effectively. They also have psychiatrist teams, civilians, sending out teams to deal with these types of issues. So I just don't think we talk enough about what a great job they're doing.
You know what? And I have to say something about that, Marco. You know, the first time I heard about you was you announcing your run for office, right? And so a lot of us are not talking from what we read. We're talking from actual experience. A lot of officers are my friends as well. And a lot of the officers and officers of color who actually want to stand up for justice and equity and righteousness, they are saying, within the department, they are not supported when they stand up and say certain things. I have a great relationship with Chief Neslight. That is not the question. Do we have some okay or good officers? We're talking about systemic issues, systemic racism, systemic implementation that we must change and must root out. And so I'm sorry that I'm not really sympathetic to what you're talking about from something you read, but I'm talking about what I and other people who I love in my community experience every single day. And so for you to show up with your Republican talking points is an issue for me.
Well, I want to just bring another thing because, you know, Marco, I have in my role as city council member of La Mesa, you know, sat down with our chief of police and other officers. And, you know, even they will tell you, whether it's in public or behind closed doors, that when you have one or two rogue officers and it paints the whole picture of the police department in a negative light, they don't like that. They want to see change themselves, okay? So, you know, you have to recognize the fact that it's not just, you know, it's not just this particular individual. When I looked at what was happening in La Mesa, when it turned into the riot in the evening, because of the actions of one police officer, all of those officers ended up having to deal with the actions of what happened because one police officer decided to approach a young African-American man unjustly and then lie about it. So,
yeah, but, you know, common sense would say to think that because of one or a few officers that are not doing a good job, to say that all of them are like that is not in our best interest for the community. And if you have, you know, any organization, any business, any, you're going to find a few that are not good. And we need to deal with them. We need to get rid of them.
Nobody's saying that they're all, saying that they're all wrong, right? No one has said that.
That's what the rhetoric sounds like.
No. What I will tell you though, is that there are policies and laws within California that make it extremely hard to deal with those one or two officers that are bad apples or who have gone rogue. And those are the things that need to change. Those are the obstacles that I came up against when I was trying to deal with that officer who did what he did at MTS. Those are the issues that the California Legislative Black Caucus have been dealing with and the bills that they're bringing forth. So when you're talking about decertification, you're not just saying just anybody in general. We're talking about repetitive behavior, because that's what you see when you have these rogue or these individual bad cops. But I don't think anybody on here said that all cops are bad. We all know cops. We all have them in our family. We have them that are close to us. But we do, we can, just because there are a lot of good ones, we cannot ignore the few that are bad and are painting a picture, a negative picture of the entire police department, and end up having significant harms to cities and residents.
Okay. If that's the thing, then why wouldn't you guys accept their endorsements?
Because it's a systemic issue. Why are you not willing to hear that? It's a systemic issue. When you take money from police unions and police associations, a lot of the work and the policy that you are going to try to get done, they're going to try to stop that. And I'm not expecting anything from you. But as for the rest of us, when we try to get policies done, Dr. Weber's bill, the bill looked a lot different initially. AB 932 looked a lot different, but it had to get watered down. Why? Because police unions came to the table and wanted to try to negotiate. And this is why we still have some of the issues we have today. When you take union money, when you take money from special interest and establishment, then you are going to adhere to what they want you to do and not what is in the best interest of the community and the people. And that is why we keep coming up short every single time.
I think,
and I would agree with that. We got to put the people first.
I think that's this is such interesting rhetoric. I mean, Marco, would you take the endorsement of the teachers union and some of the restrictions that come along and some of the goals that they bring along with that?
I don't think they would want to give me an endorsement or anything. So that's not even a question.
But I think that's kind of an interesting.
Oh, I've actually been endorsed by the California Teachers Association. I think I failed to mention that earlier, and I'm not sure what restrictions you're talking about.
I just mean as far as, willing to get rid of the bad apples is what was discussed.
So it's let's talk about that for a second. It's always fascinating that the teachers union gets blamed for that, because we don't give credentials. We don't hire people. We don't evaluate people, and we can't fire anyone. That's administration, and that's the district. I've seen teachers get fired. The myth that teachers don't get fired is a myth. Nobody's, due to privacy, nobody's saying, hey, we fired this teacher. And then secondly, I've actually seen a good teacher fired. The admin was a horrible person. All unions do are guaranteed due process. So that when I go to the school board and I call them out for stealing money from the English learners, they can't turn around and fire me.
So what is the flaw then?
I'm able to advocate.
What is the flaw then with the police officers union and how they act and how they interplay with politics?
So do working people have the right to organize? Yes.
Absolutely.
Working people have the right to organize. So like Amika, I would push back. Like, to me, there's a difference between taking corporate PAC money, where the corporations are, they're representing shareholders and investors, versus taking union money, where your union is representing working people. And 79 is a very union heavy district. And we actually have seen a decrease in living standards throughout the entire country as the membership in unions has decreased. So no, do police officers have the right to organize? Yeah, but if you look back at the history of where policing actually comes from, it doesn't have very pretty beginnings, and it's usually to uphold institutional, it's to uphold racism and white supremacy, or to suppress working people from trying to actually make a living wage.
And I just want to respond to what Shane said, if that's okay, Scott. You know, me and Shane agree on a lot of things. We've gotten arrested together. We've been through it all. But I have to say that, you know, I have, and I'm pretty open about this, I have been an organizer. For many years, I was an organizer with SDOP, and we were a part of an Invest in San Diego Families, which is a coalition of many unions and county workers. And I fought for county workers. I'm very much, if you are a public employee, I'm very much going to fight for you if you are not being treated fairly, or you're not getting the benefits, the pension, all of the things that you deserve. What I have to say about teachers unions, police unions, and other unions is all unions are not created equal. And many times, I mean, and people always ask me, why do I have something to say about PLA agreements and all of these different things? And the reason why I'm not getting endorsed by most of the unions and most of the associations is because I'm independent. I evaluate each thing differently. And so there, you know, if I'm going to fight for families, I'm going to do it in a way I have to look at the lens. And I look at everything through an equity lens. And what I mean by that is we have labor union and association heads that operate outside of the best interest of the labor members. And I have seen that over and over when Black women have contributed so much to the labor organization, but are so mistreated many times within labor organizations by the labor heads. So I have to acknowledge that all labor's unions are not created equal. And that's what I mean by that, Shane. I don't have anything against the teachers.
I agree that not all unions are created equal. And that's actually how I got involved in my union, was I started a reform caucus because I was dissatisfied with what my leadership was doing. But unions aren't people who sit in an office. Unions are the workers. Like, I am the California Teachers Association. Teachers are the union. So this again, this myth, this talking point that the union is not the worker, really, it needs to get cut out of the public conversation. Like, not specific to you, just in general.
I want to hear from Leticia, too, because she is actually part of a union. But go ahead, Aramy.
No, I just wanted to say, I think this race, the 79th race, Shane, and I don't know if you would agree, this race is an example of how the heads of things make decisions and not the actual people having the opportunity to make the best decision for who they want to see represent them. So,
Leticia, I want to hear from you.
So, you know, 17 years of my life has been dedicated to advocating on behalf of workers for wages, hours, and working conditions. And the power that we have as a multiracial coalition to advocate on behalf of workers is the most powerful thing in our country. It's what's built our middle class. And I will say this, that it's going to take us all in Assembly District 79 to make sure that on Tuesday, April the 6th, that we elect the candidate, myself, who's ready to serve in Sacramento, to make sure that we build the tomorrow that includes us all. And I will share this. There's a difference, and I think what you have all identified in your various comments is there's a difference between a labor organization and then the power of the members of a union that is able to make sure that our worker rights are protected on the job. I think all of you have mentioned that. I will share this with you, that I need to acknowledge that what we have been through as a nation and how we move forward is going to take clear dedication to ensure that our residents and resources that our communities need come from Sacramento, and that you have a champion in advocating to make sure that we get our fair share of the resources and start to reimagine what our future is going to be in representing the Assembly District 79.
Thank you. Well, that we could have gone again, and maybe we need to do another one coming up. I think people appreciate the back and forth, the respect, but also the difference of opinion. And I think it was important to highlight.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you all so much. So I just want to give a plug. Voice of San Diego is a nonprofit news organization. We make this work with your donations as well. So voicesandiego.org/donate. Please, if you care about this stuff, if you care about local politics, local public policy, you can follow it all at voiceofsandiego.org. Thanks again. It's hard to run for office. I've watched thousands go through it. Maybe not thousands, but sure seems like it. And it is a real toll, and it's a real act of service. And I appreciate people who stand up to do it. So thank you all for participating. I know a lot of you have other things to do. And on that, please go to voicesandiego.org, and thanks for your support. And we'll try to do another one of these soon.
Thank Cheers. You, Scott.
Thanks, Ellen. Thanks for listening to the Voice of San Diego podcast bonus episode. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. We'll be back this Friday, as usual, with our recap of the week's news. And if you want to keep up with all the state assembly and political news, we've got newsletters for you. The Sacramento Report, the Politics Report come out every week. Get those at vusd.org/newsletters. I'm Scott Lewis, CEO and Editor-in-Chief at Voice of San Diego. This show was produced by Nate John. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you soon.